This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Shaoning, and this is The Morning Run with Roshan Kanisan from the depths of Petaling Jaya. It has just gone past 7:17, Tuesday the 27th of October. And in about half an hour, we will be speaking to Dr. O.E. Sun, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, on the overnight political developments. Meanwhile, we are asking on Twitter this morning, what will it take for politicking to end? And we have four options: anti-party hopping law, general elections, a new crop of leaders, or it will never end. Please vote on Twitter at BFM Radio. But in the meantime, let's talk about pay. Because according to the latest Corporate Governance Monitor 2020 report by the Securities Commission Malaysia, 7 out of the top 10 highest remunerated boards of companies last year consisted of family-controlled companies, which also represented the top highest paid CEOs. This despite total board remuneration of companies for the FTSE Bursa Malaysia Top 100 Index declining by 12% in 2019, largely driven by the 14.5% drop in the remuneration of executive directors. Now, the SE compared the changes in the total remuneration value between 2018 and 2019 and found that 52 boards monitored by the commission recorded an increase in payout, while 46 boards saw a decline. So for more on this, we have with us Foo Lee Mei, Chief Regulatory Officer at the Securities Commission, on the line with us. Good morning. Now, given what is highlighted about the board and the CEO remuneration in your report, does the family-controlled nature of these companies show a disconnect between better practices within the FBM 100 companies? Is there proper justification for such high CEO remuneration?
Well, we do not really see a disconnect. In fact, there is quite some alignment in terms of family-controlled companies and the FBM 100 companies when it comes to adoption of best practices in the code. For example, many of the family control boards do have majority independent directors. Many of them also have 30% or more women directors on board. In fact, one of the family control company has 50% women on board. So essentially, we do not see a disconnect in that sense. Now, with regards to the CEO pay or board remuneration, I think what is important for us to remember is that we do not want to underpay our boards and CEOs, but neither do we want to overpay them. So the balance is to find the right remuneration. And if you can look at figure 1 at page 35 of our monitor, now, that median line is where the sweet spot is. So you can see that companies below the median line, the arrows are moving up. And companies above the median line, many arrows are moving down. So we are happy to see this trend. And we hope that we can eventually achieve a situation where boards are remunerated for their skills, for their experience, and for their ability to drive the long-term growth of the company.
Can CEO and board of director remuneration be tracked and pegged according to the performances of the company itself? Would that improve the perception that C-suite personnel are grossly overpaid?
Well, pay versus performance is certainly a very important component of our corporate governance practices. Now, it is for this very reason that the Securities Commission has undertaken this thematic review on CEO pay as well as board remuneration. Now, if you look at the Malaysian Code on Corporate Governance, we do give quite a lot of emphasis on pay versus performance. And this two thematic study will, in fact, pave the way for our future work in this area. Now, when it comes to determining board remuneration, there are two important players here. One is the remuneration committee. The remuneration committee of the board has a very important role to play to ensure that the process and criteria used to determine remuneration is robust and the remuneration packages are fair. Now, the other very important player is, of course, the shareholders. Now, they are empowered by law to vote on remuneration of board of directors. So they should demand for more information or better disclosures to assist them in exercising their votes accordingly to determine remuneration of the board. Now, before I end this answer, if I can add that institutional investors do have a very important role to play, there is definitely room for them to step up and ensure greater alignment between pay versus performance.
Now, the report also showed a slight improvement of gender diversity on board of listed companies, and it was about 25%. But this is still behind the 30% goal as prescribed by NGOs like the 30% Club. So what more can be done to promote gender diversity? Or is it a case of companies in Malaysia not really caring about such things?
I would like to believe that companies do care about promoting gender diversity. Now, why do I say so? Well, we have seen an increase in the number of public listed companies with more than 30% women on board. We have also seen the decrease of all-male boards on PLCs, and a number of mid and small cap companies have formally adopted the 30% gender diversity target. And we're happy to note that, in fact, these small and mid-cap companies have, in fact, been the trailblazers in this regard. But more can and should be done. One of the options that has been adopted by some countries like France and India is to mandate a quota. However, in considering whether to mandate a quota, we need to ask ourselves these questions. Is mandating a quota in line with our approach in promoting internalization of corporate governance, values, and culture? And secondly, will quota be just a quick fix, which is not sustainable? So when the SC did a public consultation in 2017, when we were drafting this code, some of the responses we received from women themselves is that they do not just want to be counted as a number, and they want to be appointed to boards based on merits. So in this regard, the SC will intensify our efforts and continue to work closely with stakeholders like 30% Club, the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, and the Institutional Investors Council to drive this agenda forward.
Your report also notes that there has been poor turnout of tier two voters with on 40% of non-large shareholders casting their votes. What are the gaps here? Why is there still poor turnout?
Now, for shareholders' turnout, I think generally our observation is that minority shareholders generally do not vote at general meetings. For the two-tier voting process, we want to highlight that, in fact, this process was introduced to empower minority shareholders. This is because in the tier two vote, if more than 50% of the minority shareholders vote against the extension of a long-serving independent director, the said director will not be retained as an independent director. So to all the minority shareholders out there, your vote matters.
Now, Li Mei, at the end of the day, many of these disclosures are voluntary. So aside from making them a regulatory requirement, how can Malaysian companies be persuaded to see the benefit of raising their level of disclosure and also then complying fully with the Malaysian Corporate Governance Code?
Now, there are many ways to promote good corporate governance. The MCCG, or our code, is the soft law, we call it, where adoption is encouraged but tracked through mandatory disclosures. Now, other fundamental corporate governance requirements are mandated in the listing requirements, where breaches may result in sanctions. There is really no silver bullet. Driving corporate governance requires effective use of a mixed bag of tools. Now, with regards to how companies can benefit from good corporate governance, A recent report by Maybank Kim Eng highlighted that companies with higher ESG scores or ratings outperform companies with lower scores. Now, how has this been achieved? Because of their good governance score. So, at the end of the day, empirical studies have proven that good governance pays.
Thank you for your time. That was Foo Lee Mei, Chief Regulatory Officer at the Securities Commission Malaysia, giving us the lowdown on their recent report. Now, what's interesting for me is her point about what is that sweet spot when it comes to pay, right? You don't want to overpay a board, neither do you want to underpay. And that's important because boards need to be incentivized to perform. But also, if the company is not performing, why should they be paid too much? And there's really, how do you actually calculate this, right? What should it be based on? And I think this is like the billion dollar question. Should it be based on a short term, medium term, long term? Should it be based on profit, for example, or is it a return on equity? Or should it be another matrix that we are not even considering? What were your key takeaways, Roshan?
I think everyone needs to hire a Goldilocks consultant, right? Find that middle sweet spot to get that median line for performance. But I mean, performance aside, I was particularly paying attention to the shareholder's point of view, right? I think there were some really good points made there that essentially, as a shareholder, you have to realize that you have rights to exercise and you should do that. You have a say with your vote. And with minority shareholders in the tier two vote, you do have more say, right? Because sometimes you feel like as a minority shareholder, the majority holders can get their way of a lot of things. But that's why the SE has this tier two vote. If minority shareholders have 50% or more vote against a motion, they can vote against the board member being re-elected or continuing their term, right? Getting your voices heard is so important.
Yeah, I think in the last few years, what has also been very encouraging is some of the Malaysian institutional investors have become more active and voting against things like unnecessarily high pay. So it's good that there's a lot more focus on all this. But up next, we'll be speaking to Chris Segers, Professor of Law at Cleveland State University, on the landmark lawsuit from the U.S. Department of Justice against Google. That's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.